SU for undergrad, they would do this session every year where a few honors kids would come and they got to pick their major that they thought they wanted to do, and they would show them cool math problems that were all secretly related to graph theory, but they don't say that at the presentations, that got people to be math majors because they're really interesting problems. And so here are the three. I say there are things to tell people at parties, but don't talk to people at math about parties, because it's always just like one weird guy who wants to talk about math because he doesn't want to socialize with people. So yeah, there's my warning. So if there's time, I can talk about how these things are connected to graph theory. Although, so who here knows the definition of graph and edge? I mean, raise your hand. All right, so it's a good chunk of you, but like you don't have to know it. I promise there is no prerequisite knowledge for this talk. But if you hear the word vertex, if I accidentally say it, replace it with the word dot. And if you hear the word edge, replace it with the word line between two dots. That's exactly what I mean. Okay. Now for something that's not the same. Look at that chessboard on the board. All right? You got a chessboard. Also, if you've seen this problem before, don't like ruin it for everybody else. You also have 32 2 by 1 dominoes, right? So here's the warm-up question you give to people to see if they actually pay attention and can tell if they actually understand your question. The question is, can you tile this chessboard with 2 by 1 dominoes such that no dominoes like hanging off the edge, every square is covered, and it's covered by only one? So like you can't have two dominoes laying on this square. Does that make sense? So I'll give you like 30 seconds to think about it and ask for clarifying questions. So the question is, you have 32 of these dominoes, there's 64 squares. Can you tile the chessboard?
So are we talking like other than the obvious answer?
No, I mean, it's the obvious answer. It's but it's not obvious to, like, you. It's only obvious if you see it. But, yeah, this is the question you ask people to see if they're really paying attention, or they'll go, don't ask me questions, just tell me.
Just, like, why don't we tell four dominoes?
Yeah, right? We could say vertically tile 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. Yeah, so, any questions on that one? Okay, now make it slightly harder. Now, let's say I take my pair of scissors and I take off this square of the chessboard and this square of the chessboard. So our vertical tiling won't work anymore. Can we tile?
Do a horizontal tiling.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you're a senior. You know everything. But yeah, right, do a horizontal tiling, okay. 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. Cool. Okay, so are there any questions about either of those tilings? You have to get to this one, or else people think you're just lame for talking about random tilings you can do. So I'll draw the pieces back in. Now here's a bit more interesting of a question. Okay, I cut out this corner and this corner, and we could tile it, right? How about if I cut out this corner, and instead of cutting out this corner, then I cut out this bottom corner. Now the question is, can you tile it? Have you seen this before? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thought, okay. Think about, you're probably going to hear, this is the least common one, so you're going to hear the other two too. So yeah, think about it for like, you know, a good minute. You don't have to answer, but like, just, you can try various tilings. Depending on your level of math, you might know how to prove by contradict, especially if you ever did a comment for XRU. Yeah, Dylan, do you know random theory?
Yeah, I know some.
You can leave if you want.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, these types of problems are actually like I've done a couple times, like these types of arguments.
like it a lot. There was one, oh, I should have brought this. There was a button, maybe you took it. It was like the isocahedron has numbers painted on it.
And you want like someone to make one here or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. Because I got it.
Don't let those problems have to do with like looking at orbits of some action.
You might be able to phrase them that way, but I definitely like didn't solve them that way.
Yeah, it's much more combinatorial than group theoretic.
Okay.
At least the particular problem I'm putting them 2 years ago. Anyway, did anybody actually get a conclusive answer? Yeah. So the answer is no. Okay, but why? Does anybody want to tell me who actually hasn't seen it before?
Hold on. I thought that was an odd number of tiles. That's why it's possible.
Ah, so yeah. So if we do cut out just this one corner, that's exactly the right reason. But sadly, make it if you want to put a sub question in to make it sound like you're building up more. You could cut out one corner because then you go, no, there's an odd number here. But if I put k tiles, there's 2k, an even number.
Right.
But I did cut out two. So.
So I guess it's relevant that you. The two you cut up are the same color.
Yes, it has to be. First. Yes, and that's a very good intuition. So let's explore that. So I actually don't know your guys' backgrounds. Has anyone here never taken a math class before? So can I say proof by contradiction without like making anybody freak if you want.
No one proved yet.
Sure. Oh, no, that's fine. So let's talk about this. So basically, we're going to prove that no tiling exists, right? We're going to prove that there's no way to tile it. And here's how we're going to do that. We're going to say, well, if, we're going to see what happens if a tiling exists. Because that's how proof by contradiction works. Like, basically, you can think of it in real life, like, oh, you're a detective solving a murder case, and the murderer tells you a lie. Like, I was at the store at 5 o'clock. And you think, well, if you really were at the store, the security footage would show you were at the store. But it does not show that you were at the store. Therefore, what you said was a lie. Now I'm going to tell you a lie. I'm going to say, you can totally cover it, right? So let's assume we can tile. Yeah, and let's see what goes wrong. Well, if I put one domino down, it must cover, well, how many, let's call this kind of color, let's call it black for argument's sake. So no matter where I put a domino down, if I put it down, how many black squares would have to cover?
One.
One, right? There's no way I can put it, because I can't put it like diagonal. I know if I put it vertical or horizontal. So no matter where I put it, it's going to cover exactly one black square, right? It must cover one black square. Right? Okay. By the way, this talk, I don't know if you actually read the abstract and stuff, but the talk is literally meant to be understood with no prerequisites, and you should understand every word. So I mean this sincerely. Please interrupt me. You know, Jones is a super cool senior, so he knows this all, but you might not. And then one day when you're a senior, and I do this talk again maybe, you can sound super cool when you know everything. So yeah, is everybody good so far? It covers one black square. Okay, test your understanding. How many white squares does that have to cover?
One.
Right, yeah, one white square. It's the same. So I cut two squares up. We need 31 dominoes, right? Okay. So one domino down covers one black square and one white square. So if I put 31 dominoes down, well, to tile, right? They cover, well, each one covers one black square and one white square, So how many black squares will 31 dominoes cover? Wait. Hold on. So we're putting 31 dominoes down because there's 62 squares. Right?
Yeah.
So you put 31 dominoes down because there's 62 squares. So if I put 31 dominoes down, if I put one domino down, it has to cover, no matter where I put it, it has to cover one black and one white.
31 black.
Yeah. It must cover 31 black and 31 white squares. In particular, if a tiling exists, there are 31 white squares. How many white squares are there on that chessboard?
29.
Yeah, but there were 32. So to start, there were 32 and 32. Right? And then I cut out two black squares. No, it's okay, trust me. The more you do math, the more you'll realize that you actually can't do arithmetic. So the fact that you're not getting these things right is actually a sign you're going to fit in well if you do math majoring. Yeah, so there were 32 and 32. I took out two black squares, right? But this says if I have a tiling, there are 31 white squares. So the conclusion is that 31 is 32. If there's a tiling, 31 is 32.
31 is 30?
That would be if I did it with black squares. We could also conclude 31 is 30. I'm not really a philosopher type, but I don't think that's true. I can't prove it, but I don't know. I think it's defined to be not the case. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You know Peano axioms and stuff? Zero is not one. That's by definition. Okay, anyway, this is false. So our assumption is false. There's no tiling. Okay? Pretty fucking cool, right? Oh, there's a camera.
You're welcome.
So are there any questions on that one? Cool. It's just it's a really interesting thing. So for you smarty pantses that have seen this before, because you probably have seen the next thing I'm going to talk about, but the thing after called Ramsey theory, you should check and see whether this statement's true. Is it true that if I have the same number of white squares and black squares, no matter how I cut it up, is it true that I could tile it? So remember. Now, pretend these corners are back. When I cut out one white and one black right here, I was able to tile it, right? So the question is, if I cut out the board such that, okay, it's connected. So, like, if I cut out two white squares. So the further question, if I have n black squares and n white squares, so the same number is the important part. Left after after cutting and the board is connected. So for example, if I call this square 1, this square 2, oh no, never mind. Doing that thing people sometimes do. Yeah, so like if I call this like 3 and 4, if I cut out square 1, 2, 3, and 4, I've kind of isolated this square, right? I still have cut out the same number of black squares and the same number of white squares, but I isolated this square. So that I'm asking, is there a connected one that, which if you have seen the graph theory, a connected graph is just you can start at one vertex, or in this case a square, you can walk over to any other one. So the question is there, if there's n squares left and n White squares left after cutting and the board is connected. Can I tile? You should think about that during Ramsey theory if you already know it. Because it's kind of a deeper question. First person that told me the answer was Teddy Weissman, who you may know if you know a graduate student. Great, that took 15 minutes. Now let's do another one. Okay, so, yeah, are there any questions on that one? So basically, this sort of, if you actually have 15 minutes to explain this to another human that doesn't know math, the point of this example, besides that math is really freaking cool, is that mathematicians do not, like, add really big numbers or anything like that. Most of you know this, but people don't understand this, right? The point of math is that we take something that could be astronomically complex. Like, for example, I actually had you compute this one time. If you could do, like, 10 million computations a second and try 10 million tilings, it would take longer than the age of the universe to solve this by trying every possible tiling, right? So if you don't take advantage of symmetry or anything. But that's what math does. It takes advantage of this kind of stuff and does clever ideas to think things, like, through really cleverly, right? And so that's why math is great, and we're the best. Second thing. Let's talk about something called the Euler characteristic. So maybe I'll define a graph. Definition. A graph is a collection of dots where any two dots have exactly zero or exactly one line connecting them / curve connecting them. So don't freak out about this definition because it, to be technical, I have to say these things, but I'll just give you examples and you can go by your examples. So here are examples of graphs. This graph is called utility graph on three houses and three electric companies. This graph is called the complete graph on four vertices. But they're just random graphs. This whole thing is a graph. So what I mean by exactly one, so this is what we call a non-example. It's an example of something that doesn't satisfy the conditions that can help elaborate what a graph actually is. This is a non-example for our purposes because these two dots have three curves connecting them, right? So, definition, a graph is planar if you can draw it with no edge crossings. If you can move dots and arrows so lines don't cross. So what's an example of that? Well, okay. This is a planar graph. No lines cross. This is a planar graph. Wait. Note that if I allow myself to like pull this string off this string, they're the same graph. So that's what I mean by it could be moved without edge crossings, right? So it's not that it is drawn without edge crossings, but it could be, right? Also, the complete graph on four vertices is planar because I'm going to keep this edge in. All right, now I need to draw one more edge, but I can't go this way, so I'll just go outside. So that shows the complete graph on four vertices is planar. So any questions on what this means? Great. Cool. All right. am I hip and connecting with you young people? You crazy mathematicians of the future, like I'm 1 year older than half of you. So here's a theorem, it's pretty cool. It's called the Euler characteristic. Well, first let's do an example. So, let's call a face one of two things. Let's call it anything that's inside of a region. So this is a face inside this one face. And then we also call the big outside face a face. So this triangle has one face on the inside and one face on the big outside. Right? So how many vertices, aka dots, are there on this triangle? Triangle, there are three. Yes, three vertices. How many lines / edges?
Also
three lines. And okay, remember I define a face as anything bounded by a region and this big outside face. So how many faces are there in the triangle? Two, yeah. So two faces. Okay. What's vertices, zero dimensional things, minus one dimensional things, plus two dimensional things, what number do I get? Three minus three plus two is two, right? Okay. Now this is a pretty strange thing to do. I don't know who did this first. I guess it's called Euler characteristics, probably Euler. All right, how about on K4? So K4 is the complete graph on four vertices. We've drawn it to be planar. There are how many vertices?
One.
How many edges?
Six.
How many faces? Don't forget to count the big outside face.
Four.
Okay, what's four plus six? 4 minus 6 plus 4?
Minus 2.
Minus 2?
2.
See, you're all too good at math, but you can't do arithmetic. It's 2. Although, I feel like you know the Euler characteristics, so you should have just cheated. Do you know the Euler? Okay, yeah, you should have just cheated. You just say, yeah, so it turns out that no matter how you draw a graph, if you take the number of vertices, as long as it's planar, meaning no edge crossings like this, if you take the number of vertices, subtract the number of edges, and add the number of faces, you get 2, which is weird. So I'm going to write it like this for a planar connected graph G. And don't worry what this thing connected means for now. G, the vertices minus the edges plus the faces, the number of them is always 2. All right, so this is kind of an interesting thing. But it's kind of interesting in its own sake, but it also has applications to the, I don't want to say real world, because this is not a real world thing. But basically, there's a soccer ball, right? So we're going to cover it with pentagons and hexagons, okay? So see, we've got pentagons, five-sided things, right? We've got hexagons, six-sided things. Fair? Okay, great. So we're going to tile a soccer ball, and we're going to figure out how many... Can we tile it another way? I haven't counted, but I don't know exactly how many pentagons there are and how many hexagons there are, but let's see if we can find anything out about it. So we call this a corollary. Well, let's just not say that. Let's just say, okay... The only thing that matters about the Euler characteristic is that it also applies to the sphere. So, like, if I can draw a graph on the sphere in the same way I can draw a graph on the plane. If you know the thing called the stereographic projection, that's basically the reason, combined with the fact that there's no graph that covers the whole plane. So, let's see. Let's let P be the number of pentagons. on the soccer ball, right? And let's let h be the number of hexagons. Okay? So let's start off easy. This kind of makes a graph, right? If you put a dot in each place it intersects. So if I have p pentagons, each pentagon gives me a face, right? And each hexagon gives me a face. So if I have p pentagons and h hexagons, how many faces do I have? Yeah, p plus h, right? Take the number of pentagon faces you get plus the number of hexagon faces you get. Okay. Face. All right. Well, how many edges do I have? Well, each pentagon gives me 5 edges, right? So it's 5 times the number of pentagons we have, plus, okay, each hexagon gives me 6 edges. But notice that if we counted the edges of this hexagon, say, and the edges of this pentagon, we actually double count this edge. We double count every edge, so we have to divide this by what? Yeah, 2, right? And then how many vertices are there? Well, we're going to play the same argument. So on every pentagon, there are how many vertices slash dots? 5, right? So it's 5 times the number of pentagons plus, all right, on a hexagon there are 6. But now we're not actually double counting anymore at each point. What are we actually doing? Yeah, we're triple counting. So we should correct this by dividing by 3. Okay, so let's put this stuff in the Euler characteristic formula and see what happens. And, cool. So, well, we know that the number of vertices minus the number of, I'm sorry, the number of vertices minus the number of edges plus the number of faces is 2. So we know that 5p plus 6h divided by 3 minus e, which is 5p plus 6h over 2, plus p plus h, any questions on that?
So wouldn't the number of vertices just be 5p?
So if let's see. Could the number of vertices be 5p? You might not be wrong. There's multiple ways to count these things. In fact, at first glance, yeah, it could be 5. Yeah, because the pentagons don't touch each other, right?
Right.
So we can do that later, see what happens if we put in 5p. But this is the one I know works. But, so you should, I accept that 5p, because it these vertices touch once by the pentagon, is also, so we could write this equals 5p. And we get an equation. But you should also see why this is another alternative expression. Because I could count each for the pentagons and the hexagons, and then each vertex, no matter where it is, gets triple counted. But yeah, it'll probably work if we count it that way too. So let's multiply everything by 6, both sides by 6, and see what happens. So I get 2 times 5p plus 6h minus, okay, 6 times 6 divided by 2 is 3. So this is 3 times 5p plus 6h plus 6p plus 6h equals 12. Cool. 10p minus 15p plus 6p is 1p, yeah. Okay. 12h minus 18h plus 6h is 0h. So we get p equals 12. Wow. So there's a, you have to put 12 pentagon if you want to tile soccer ball. The Euler characteristic says this. Moreover, how many hexagons are there? Well, since we sort of want our tiling to be that a pentagon is always surrounded by hexagons, okay, we know that the number of hexagons, well, on each pentagon, there are 5 surrounding hexagons, right? 5 times the number of pentagons, but then we triple count each hexagon, so we have to divide this by 3. So this is 5 halves times 12, which is 20. Lo and behold, there's a unique way to tile a soccer ball. Any questions on that? How pretty is that? Yeah, it was pretty funny. Once they gave this presentation at the like high school senior, the high school senior be a math major thing, and this really annoying mom raised her hand and was like, "Well, what jobs can you get with that?" It's like, of course you're not going to get a freaking job with like, "Oh yeah, there's 12 pentagons here." Like, you suck. Okay.
I'm sure you do a donut shaped soccer ball.
Oh, let's see how much time I have left. Could I? That's an interesting thought. Well, yeah, so if you can draw graphs on the donut, and then this number just changes to 0. So, assuming that you want the same tiling, that just says you get 0 pentagons and 0 hexagons, right? Yeah, because this side of the equation doesn't change. So you can't tile it. Interesting. We should write a paper on it.
What about the Klein bottle?
The Klein bottle, I think if you can, maybe not. I was thinking if you, no, you could probably tile it. What's the character, what are the characteristics of Klein bottle? No, I think it's 0 again.
I think it's like, is it 0? It's
minus 2, right?
Minus
2
or
minus 1?
Genus
2, right?
No, because it's not original, so it's like,
oh,
it's, oh, wait, like it's 1 really minus G. I think it's like minus 1.
Yeah, I can't remember. Was it RP2 that the... Yeah, RP2 is the Euler characteristic is 0. That's right. And then don't worry about this a bit if you don't know what we're saying. Here's the last thing, which is fun for me because it's the theorem about friendship. And it's funny because it's like, what do you know? Well, I know this about friendship. I don't need friends to know this. Okay, so here's the scenario, right? And this is kind of like a me pretty thing. My favorite professor in the whole wide world always used this because she had a soccer ball in her office. But this thing, I think, is the best example to explain to people because not only is it me proof, it also gets you the idea of what mathematicians actually do, which is. Because this problem actually butts up to the frontiers of mathematical research in one area. So here's the problem. You have 6 friends in your room, right? Well, I'll just tell you what the theorem is. Now I'll tell you what the problem is. Theorem. Called Ramsey's. There are 6 people in the room. There's a group of 3 of us that are either all friends, or there's a group of 3 friends that are all strangers, right? Assuming that you're either one or the other, right? So here's the proof. And for the people who have done some kind of graph theory, it sort of explains the applications of graphs, like why graph isomorphisms matter. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, ignore it, but I'll point it out. Okay, here's how you do it. Here's how you prove this. Proof. Line up all your friends in a line. Well, they're not your friends. They're maybe each other's friends. So first, let me be clear about what I mean by three mutual friends. So this means that, like, if me, Dylan, and Zach, we all know each other, and each of the pairs of us are friends, I hope. Right? So that's what it means for the three of us to be all mutual friends. Right? On the other hand, I don't know the mayor of Dallas. The mayor of Dallas doesn't know me, and the mayor of Dallas doesn't know... Sure, thank you. Yeah, so those are three mutual strangers. Okay, but here's something that neither. I know Dylan. You don't know Will Smith, do you?
Not personally.
Okay, yeah. Neither of us know Will Smith. That's a thing that can't happen. Either all of us are in, or none of us know any of us. Okay, so let's prove it. Well, make your friends dots. Okay? Don't kill one. Take your friend, one of your friends, and move them to the front of the room. Okay? So, there are five people, right? So, there could either be five strangers. He could have five friends. He could have four friends. He could have three friends, two friends, one friend, or the Tom case, right? So, if he has three or more friends, we're going to let white, so let's call this P1. If P1 has greater than or equal to three friends, we're going to draw lines if they're friends, right? Means friend. But if he doesn't have, if he has less than three friends, he has three strangers, at least, right? If P1 has less than three friends, he has greater than or equal to three strangers, right? So make sure this is clear, because there's only two boxes these people can go in. They can either be friends or strangers. So one of them is going to have three or more. I'm going to make white the color of being whatever one has three or more. So this is the thing in math we do. We take advantage of symmetries. So we're going to figure out, all right, whichever one has can guarantee us three lines, right, we're going to use that as the white color chalk. Okay? So I need to, how many white lines have to come, assuming the coloring is the right way that I just said? Right, there have to be at least three white lines. Because he either has less than or equal to three friends. I'm sorry, greater than or equal to three friends. If he has more than or equal to three friends, then we can draw three friend lines, because that's what white's going to be. But if he has less than three friends, then he has to have more than or equal to three strangers, and we'll let white be strangers. Okay? So I have to draw three white lines, right? So we're going to make the people, I have to at least draw three white lines. So we don't know it's these people exactly, but what we're going to do is we're going to tell the people to move so that the people, at least the three friends, there could be more than three friends. This white line could be in two, right? And let me draw a better picture. Let me kill all the friends. So again, our setup is we have a designated person one, and we have his five friends. Okay? Now we know there have to be three white lines. So we don't know which they are, but we're going to tell one person with a white line to step over here. We're going to draw the white line in. We're going to tell one person to step right here, and we're going to tell one person to step right here. Now, there could be this white line, there could be this white line. We don't know. But we do know that there have to be three of these white lines. Okay? Are there any questions on that? Great. So, now, we let white be the line whichever has more, right? So, let's say white means friends, for argument's sake. If white means friends, and I draw a white line here, we have to have three mutual friends, right? Who are the three mutual friends? Let me remember these people. If this line has to be white for friends or red for strangers. If I draw this line white, there are three people who are all mutual friends. Who are they?
1, 2, and 4.
Sure, 1, 2, and 4, right? So if this line's white, we're dead because we've proven our thing, right? So let's assume the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that these are red. Okay. So, but, okay, let's see the line from 2 to 6, person 2 to person 6, right? If I draw a white line here, then we've got our three mutual friends, right? So we've won the theorem that way, so let's talk about worst case. Worst case scenario is we have to draw a red line, right? Okay, now let's do the exact same thing with person 4 and person 6. If person 4 and 6 have a white line connecting them, then 1, 6, and 4 are all mutual friends. So worst case scenario, we have to draw a red line. And lo and behold, we have three people that are all mutual strangers. Who are they? Absolutely. That proves our theorem. And I remind you, we made no assumptions on anything. We just told people to walk around, which is those walking around things are what we talk about when we say graph isomorphisms. Are there any questions on the proof of that theorem? Cool. It's a neat little thing. But here's an even neater little thing that you can really impress someone who, for some reason, is asking more. Let's say there are n equals 6 people. This is just me. This is now the extra part. Okay, so the question is, is the theorem true when n is 5? So here's what the theorem says. The theorem says now if I have 5 people in the room, it would say, if it was true, I don't know if it's true, we'll find out together. And I have to draw either a white arrow, a white edge, or a red edge between the two. Can we always find a triangle that's either all white or a triangle that's always red? And for the sake of time, and what did I do with that red chalk? So, oh, there it is. For the sake of time, I'll tell you the answer is no. Here's why. If the friendship circle looks like a literal circle, and on the other hand, everybody else doesn't know each other, first of all, it's my favorite. But on the other hand, it also proves that the theorem is not true when there's 5 people. You can have every group either have one friendship and one strangership. Okay? So, now here's the interesting part. For those of you who don't actually know the number, so let's let, for any n, that can be a number 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or any natural number, let's let r, let's call it n actually. Let's let the Ramsey number of m be the smallest m, I'm sorry, the smallest number n where you can plug n in this theorem, and it's true, right? So let's let Rn be the smallest number n you can put in the theorem, for when m is not three, not necessarily three anymore. So, for example, R3 is asking, what's the smallest number of people you need to have in a room such that three people are all friends or three people are all strangers? So what's R3? Right, we need to have six people in the room to guarantee that three of them all know each other. Okay, how many people do I need in the room to guarantee that two of them, there will either be a group of two people who are friends or a group of two people that are strangers?
Two.
Right, two, because they're either friends or they're not friends, right? So the second Ramsey number is two. Okay, pretty simple, right? Okay. How many people do I need in a room such that if I have a group of four of us, every person in the group of every pair is either friends or every pair is either strangers? You knew it. Yeah, it's 18. No, maybe if you got that, all right, here's the next one. What's R5?
Something really big.
Well, it actually turns out that nobody knows. It's literally unknown.
Was it about your boundary between like 40 something?
I knew you'd do it. Yeah. It's, so here are the current. Here's currently what's known of R5. 43 is less than or equal to R5, which is less than or equal to 48. Fun fact: people who are in the know, this year this just got dropped to 48.
From what?
49. yeah. So this is literally the front. This is literally an unknown problem. So this is the answer to the question: well, isn't all of mathematics known? No, we don't even know what the fifth Ramsey number is, right? Oh, and what's the sixth Ramsey number? Well, here are the bounds we have on this. Let me check and make sure that one's right. We don't want to tell you lies. No, this is 165. This is even worse.
How did they obtain those bounds?
That's great. I mean,
you can do a probabilistic for the upper bound, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, you throw over, yeah.
What about the lower bound?
Well, if you want to make a lower bound, all you need to do to make a lower bound is do exactly what we did. Explicitly pray, and you'll get a specific graph,
right,
that has no complete graph of whatever your m is. So, like, in our case, we did a graph where the graph, this is not more technical terms, neither the graph nor its complement had a K3.
Right.
So all you have to do is give an explicit example. So like for any of these lower bounds, you can just Google it and you'll get the example.
Okay, so they've concocted some kind of counterexample basically.
Yeah. Okay. Checking is not hard. And yeah, so the like when you get to R, you know, if you get to like R20 or something, like there's no good, we don't know. The only way we know the upper bound is exactly what Dylan said. We said, all right, in the average, like basically there's a way to interpret the random case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probabilistic graph theory, which is really interesting. Lorenzo Zadun does that. So, yeah, I guess I'll leave you with this. Well,
there's also kind of a cute anecdote about like computing these Ramsey numbers according to like Heritage or something, right?
Yeah, so Yeah, so that's what I'll say. So people always say, like, that's the other thing. So is there unknown math? Of course there is. This is one of the unknown math things you could tell people, right? And then the answer is, like, a lot of people ask, okay, well, can't computers do everything? Well, for computers to compute R6, just like the thing before, it would take longer than the age of the universe if you gave yourself, like, exponentially more computing power that's on the Earth, right? For R5, it might be possible to compute. So that's the story you're hinting at. There's a very famous weirdo who also did a lot of mathematics named Paul Ehrlich. And he was big into Ramsey theory, and he said that if aliens come down and they threaten to destroy us, unless we can produce R5, we should assemble all the world's people, all the world's computers, and put all of our brain power and compute R5. And if the aliens come and they threaten to destroy us unless we can compute R6, we should just try and kill them. So yeah, that's kind of a neat little thing you can do to trick people into liking math. Are there any questions?
AI.
If you don't understand something, just say what's up.
Kind of like artificial intelligence, and you only like to solve it.
So the thing about artificial intelligence is that, so for the, at least for right now, artificial intelligence is at the level of it's only gotten to slightly better than people, but artificial intelligence is modeled off human. Like it's right now only slightly better than humanity. It's certainly possible that, like, one day, I believe that in 50 years, like, you know, there won't be many jobs as math people or professors and stuff, because we'll make artificial intelligence that good. But, like, for probably the short run, like probably the next 20 or 30 years, like, artificial intelligence, I mean, it hasn't even driven cars yet. So maybe your grandkids won't be able to be mathematicians, but maybe your grandkids won't be able to have a job because they're not as good as a robot, you know. But in the meantime, like, if I had to predict, knowing I have a computer science minor, my roommate's into this stuff, he's like a computer science guy, I would say that artificial intelligence won't be able to kick in until, like, to solve this kind of problem. It's probably going to be when we die, or after we die, that it's able to solve this. Now, granted, not artificial intelligence, but programming has solved other problems. If you've heard the thing called the four-color problem, that was one of the first things that was ever proven with computers. And it actually caused a big uproar, because no human could read the proof. It was too long. It was printed out by a computer. Nowadays, we accept it, because we're hip and modern and combinatorial as like computers. Yes, it's a really neat thing, man. Yeah. Any other questions?
It's like a bound for R, like a really bad bound for R, that, right? In terms of like 2 to something.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's kind of,
yeah, we'll put it
that. It's like 2 to 3 to that or something.
Yeah, so.
Oh man, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the Wikipedia page. I looked up the table.
You're a lower?
Yeah. Oh, I think like. Yeah, there's some like really trivial one about.
Yeah, one.
What? But like, it's like a minus one or something. It's like some like linear function. Or
yeah, I mean, like, if you don't have enough vertices.
Oh, yeah, we'll get that.
But yeah, so this is really interesting stuff. I like it. And these are the things that trick me into doing math. I hope it tricks you into, like, if you're not feeling so well about math being at the end of the semester, that it can, like, remember why you started. And if you haven't started yet, you're going to love it. Thanks. Any other questions?